be seated. Open your Bible to Genesis chapter 28, continuing in our journey through Jacob's life this morning. Pretty interesting family dynamic unfolding here. We've been following them as from the time that Isaac married Rebekah in the 20 years waiting for a child to be born, and then she became pregnant and had conceived twins, Esau and Jacob, we find out later. God told her that the older would serve the younger, and we saw some conflict in their lives as they went along. And so far in our journey, we've identified Isaac and Rebekah, mom and dad, and then we've got Jacob and Esau, the twin brothers, but completely different. In the next chapter or two, we're going to add three more people to the mix, and things change. Everything gets a little more dicey, and a lot of things happening in the lives of these people. We followed Jacob and Esau from their birth, where Esau was born first. Jacob came out, was named Jacob because he was the heel grabber. He was all holding on to the heel of his brother Esau as he was born, and the name Jacob means cheater, and he certainly has lived up to his name as we've watched the life progress from childhood through young adulthood, and now adults. Jacob is the one who convinced Esau to sell him his birthright, and that was because Esau despised his birthright. Later, with Jacob, with Rebekah's help, Jacob was the one who stole the birthright, who stole the blessing from his brother by deceiving his father and cheating and lying and coming up to that place in his life. And now Rebekah is so scared that Esau is going to kill Jacob that she conceives this plan to tell Isaac that Jacob needs to go to another country to find a wife, another part of the country, that she doesn't want him marrying a Canaanite, a heathen woman. And in fact, literally in the chapter before this, she said, "I would rather die than have Jacob marry a woman from here. We need to send him back to Haran, to Padan-Aram, where my brother, my uncle lives, and Jacob's uncle lives, and he can find a wife there. He can go get a wife." Now, really, all she was trying to do was save his hide, keep him from getting killed by his brother after the days of mourning for the death of their father was over. When we come to chapter 28, in the very first verse, Isaac calls Jacob in to give him the final blessing and send him away to go find a wife. Now, he had no choice. He had to do this. Even though by Jewish law or by law at that particular time, the elder son was to get the blessing, Isaac had no choice because he had already offered the blessing to Jacob and he couldn't take back the blessing that he had offered. So now when Jacob is ready to leave, he calls him in and he says, "Don't take a wife of the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Padan-Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban." God, and then he goes on and he says, "I'm going to bless you." In verse 3, "God Almighty bless you, make you fruitful, multiply you. You may become company of the peoples. May he give you the blessing of Abraham." And he goes on down. And so Isaac sent him away, but with the blessing that Esau thought he was going to get or was supposed to get. So now he's leaving and he's starting on this journey to go to Padan-Aram, to Haran, to his uncle's house. It's about a 500-mile journey. Now, we don't know. Isaac was pretty wealthy. Abraham and Isaac had a lot of possessions, and he could have sent a whole entourage with Jacob. I mean, he could have sent camels and donkeys and food and servants. He could have done that. If you remember, Abraham sent servants out to find a wife for Isaac. There was the capability of doing that, but we don't have any record that he did that. And the only reason I say that Jacob was alone is because when we find him in this passage, there's nobody else with him. There's nobody traveling with him. He's not talking about his servants. He's all alone, and he's traveling. So he leaves the house all by himself on this 500-mile journey to find a wife. Now, Jacob's plan was to leave the house, go to his uncle's house, the land where his uncle lived, 500 miles away, find a wife, settle down there for a very short period of time, and when things have cooled off, then he's going to come back home with his brother. That was his thought. But that didn't transpire. That certainly didn't happen as he went along. So he's traveling along. He's 2 days into his journey of 500 miles. Now, probably walking, it would take him 25, 30 days to go that 500 miles. Take him a long time. I mean, it wasn't like he could jump in a car, Google up where he was going on his maps and get there. He had to walk. He didn't have a donkey. He didn't have a camel, at least not that we're aware of. And he's 2 days into his journey. Now, we know he's 2 days into the journey because he stops outside of a town called Luz, L-U-Z. And we know how far Luz was away from where he started, and it's approximately a two-day journey. So he's been walking for 2 days. You ever been out on a hike, and you don't have anything specific in mind? You're just walking, and you know you got a long ways to walk. You find a rock on the path, and you kick it, and you catch up to it, and you kick it again. And you pick up rocks, and you throw at trees or squirrels, or you see a little creek, and you skip the rock, and you find a stick, and you make a walking stick. I just picture him doing that for 2 days. He's all by himself. Maybe he's carrying a little satchel with some bread and some dates and maybe some dried meat or something in there. But he's walking along 2 days into his journey, wondering what on earth is going to happen, literally running for his life. He winds up on the outskirts of this little town called Luz. He doesn't go into the town. Bible doesn't tell us why. Maybe he was afraid because he's all by himself. People in the town wouldn't know who he was. But he stays on the outskirts of town. Sun is beginning to set. It's cooling off in the evening, and he's getting a little bit tired. He probably sits down someplace, grabs a piece of bread or dates or something out of his bag, eats a little bit, and he thinks, man, I got to get some sleep. Well, he has no backpack. He has no knapsack. He's not carrying a bedroll, so he finds a rock. Not a great big huge rock, but a rock that would be big enough to keep his head up off of the ground, and he lays his head down on this rock as a pillow. His mind is racing. It's hard for him to fall asleep. There are thousands of thoughts going through his brain, trying to sort through what has happened and what's he going to do, what's it going to be like at Laban's house. And he's laying there on his back, staring up at the blackened sky and all the multitude, the myriad of stars that he sees up there. Maybe he's pointing out the Big Dipper and some of these others, and he's following them, and his mind just goes, and he tells himself, man, I got to get some sleep. I got to go to sleep. I got to shut my brain. I don't know, have you ever been there? Can't shut your brain off in the middle of the night, and you're trying to go to sleep, but you can't do it. Well, that's what he was doing. He's sitting there, and it was hard for him to go to sleep, maybe thinking about the fact that he has no place to call home right now. He has no money. Yeah, he got the birthright, and Jacob was promised by Isaac that he would be blessed, and he'd have the blessing of Abraham, but right now he's helpless, hopeless, alone, and he's got nothing. But you can't blame anybody. It was his own fault, the way that he went about things. So eventually he falls asleep. Don't know what time it was, don't know how long he lay there, but eventually he falls asleep, and in his sleep he has a dream. This is kind of a famous dream. When you read in Genesis chapter 28, beginning in verse 12, it's all about Jacob's ladder. This ladder that goes up to heaven with angels coming up and down, going up and down the ladder. God's at the top of the ladder. Now, up until this point, God has not spoken directly to Jacob ever. In fact, we're not even sure God spoke directly to Isaac. We know that he spoke to Abraham. And he told Abraham that he was going to give him the land. He told Abraham about offering Isaac. He told Abraham about all those things. And he told Abraham, I went back and looked. I didn't find any place where God talked to Isaac and said, I'm going to give you the promise of Abraham. Now, Abraham told Isaac that he would inherit the promise. So God hadn't spoken for a while. Hadn't spoken to Jacob. Hadn't spoken to Esau. Perhaps hadn't even spoken to Isaac. We're not sure. So Jacob was just kind of coasting on his father's and his grandfather's faith and going along. Now, what's interesting and what is really significant here is that God comes to Jacob at one of the lowest points in Jacob's life. Think about this. He lied to his father. He deceived his father. He stole the birthright away from his brother with his mother's help. And now he's fleeing for his life and he's got nothing. He's out in the middle of nowhere, and God comes to him at this point of desperation in his life that he's never known before. I love what C.S. Lewis said. C.S. Lewis says, God whispers to us in our pleasures, but he shouts to us in our pain. And sometimes it takes that pain to listen to the voice of God. And so God is shouting. And what is interesting is that God is the one pursuing Jacob, not Jacob seeking God. In a minute, I'm going to show you, Jacob didn't even think God cared about him. Jacob didn't think God was with him anymore. Jacob had abandoned his family and supposedly felt like he had abandoned his God. So here's this dream. He's sound asleep. Maybe he's tossing and turning. He's in that REM mode where his eyes are twitching, and he's dreaming this dream, and he sees this ladder, this huge extension ladder that's going from the earth all the way up into heaven. And on this ladder, there are angels just filling the ladder, going up and down. And it must have been a pretty big ladder, but they're going up and down, never stopping. According to the Hebrew interpretation or the Hebrew words there, it's a constant flow. Angels up and down, no gap in the ladder. Just this constant flow of angels up and down. These are the heavenly couriers. Angels are God's messengers. They're his servants. And what are they doing? They're taking the word from God and bringing it down to earth. And then the ones that have delivered the message on earth are going back to get another message, and up and down and up and down and up and down. And what we know is the Lord is at the top of the ladder. He has this vision. He sees this dream in verse number 12. He dreamed a dream. Behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth. The top of it reached to heaven. And behold, angels of God were ascending and descending. And behold, the Lord stood above it. God himself is standing at the top of the ladder. And he speaks to Jacob. Can you believe that? I mean, of all people in the world God would want to talk to, I don't think it would have been Jacob. I mean, look what Jacob had done. But yet God pursues him, God finds him, and God says, I want to show you that I'm there. So what does all this mean? Here's a guy who deceived, he lied, he's estranged from his family, he cheated. He thought God was far away from him, not involved, not interested in his life, that God had turned his back. God was too busy to care about him. And Jacob, I'm sure, is thinking, well, I'm on my own. I got to take care of this myself. You know, God's not here, so I got to do it my way. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. So God comes to him in heaven, yes, but a stairway coming down where he's always there. And God is closer than you think, and his angels are always the ministering spirits taking care of the needs that we have. This ladder, this dream of a ladder, is a reminder to Jacob of the nearness of God. God was there. Listen to these verses. Listen to what God says to him. Behold, the Lord stood above it, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. First thing he tells them, he says, I am the Lord. I'm the Lord God of Abraham. I'm the Lord God of Isaac, your father. And the land that you're lying on, that rock that you're laying your head on, that belongs to you, that belongs to me. And I'm going to give you all of this land just like I promised Abraham. Now, if you could go back to Genesis chapter 12, and don't, we don't have time, but you'll find out. Go back there and read that passage, because the words that God is speaking to Jacob are almost identical to the words that he spoke to Abraham way back then. Look at verse 14. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you'll spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. He said, you're going to be the father of a great nation. That's what he told Abraham. There's going to be so many people in your tribe that all the nations of the world are going to be blessed because of you. They're all going to have the blessing because of your family. Verse 15. Behold, I am with you. I will keep you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. He says, look, I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to bring you back, and I'm not going to leave you until I'm done with what I planned for you. God is meeting Jacob at his point of deepest despair, at his point of need, and God was the one who sought out Jacob, not Jacob seeking God. All the shame that Jacob felt, the feeling of guilt and betrayal, his loss, the fact that he was looking at himself as being pretty insignificant and fearful. God says, I know who you are. I know where you are. I know what you have done, but I've got a plan for you. Was he guilty? Sure. Was he fearful? I'm sure he was, because he had no idea what was going on. Everything was uncertain. But God says, I am going to be with you, and I'll not leave you. There's a theological term for that. It's called the prevenient grace of God. Big word, right? It's grace that goes before. That's what that means. Preventive grace, if you will. Prevenient. See, here's the thing. Jacob was living in this part of his life, but God was planning this part of his life. It's like us. We're living in Monday, but God's working on Friday. He's going ahead of us. He's taking care of things before we ever get there. Worried about next week? Worried about tomorrow? You don't need to, because God is already out there taking care of that for you. That's his grace. That's what he does for us. Verse 16, Jacob wakes up. Don't know what time. You ever been woken up from a dream? You ever wake up from your dream and then go to the bathroom and get back in bed and pick up the dream right where you left off? Any of you ever do that? I don't. I mean, I can't even. I'm sure I dream. I don't remember what they are. My wife dreams in living color, technicolor, and, you know, she can do rewind and fast forward and come back to it, and she can remember. I'm sure I dream. Everybody does, but I just don't remember them. So he wakes up in verse 16. Don't know what time it is. Listen to what he says. When Jacob woke up from his sleep, when the dream woke him up, here was what he said. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it. He said, I didn't even think God cared about me. I didn't know God was here. I didn't know God was following me. I didn't know God had a plan for me. I didn't even know it. That's why I say he felt God had abandoned him. And see, he wasn't even talking to God. He wasn't praying to God because he didn't think God cared. But God did. Not only did he care, he chased him down. He followed him on his trek toward Haran. And he's outside the city of Luz, and God starts talking to him. And just a reminder of God's omnipresence, even in the middle of wilderness, where Jacob had nothing to lay his head on except a rock, God was there. He's there whether you feel like he's there or not, whether you know he's there or not, whether you think he cares or not, God is there, and he cares. Man, don't ever forget that. I like what he said. He said, surely the Lord is in this place. Not was, is. He goes on down, verse 17, he said, and he was afraid, no doubt, and he said, this is awesome. He says, how awesome is this place? There's no other place like this in the world. And when you come to the realization that God is with you, you'll say the same thing. This is so awesome that in spite of who I am, God is here. There is no place any greater than this. And he called the place Bethel, because it means house of God. He wakes up the next morning. He probably went back to sleep somewhere along the night. And he wakes up the next morning and in verse number 19, well, verse 18, woke up in the morning. He took the stone that he had his head on. He set it up as a pillar. He poured oil on top of it. He called the name of the place Bethel. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God's with me and will keep me and give me bread and clothes to wear, then I'll serve him. So here's what he says. He makes this altar because now he realizes that God is with him. And he wants to make a commitment to the Lord. He surrenders. He takes that rock, pours oil on it, sets it apart, and he says, this is going to be a pillar to remind me that this place is called Bethel. This is the house of God. And he makes a vow. And he says, if God will keep his promise, then I will serve him faithfully. In verse 20, and then he comes down to verse 22, and he says, not only that, I'm going to give God 10%. I'm going to give him 10% of everything I got. This whole passage is about God being with us in the midst of our need. I want to read a passage back in the book of John. In John chapter 1, Nathaniel comes to God. And Jesus looks at Nathaniel. He said, I saw you sitting under the fig tree. And Nathaniel says, wow, I'm going to follow you. And Jesus said, just because I said I saw you under the fig tree, you're going to follow me? But listen to what he says to him in verse 51 of John 1. He said, truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Oh, sounds like the Old Testament, doesn't it? Jacob saw the angels of God ascending and descending, and God standing at the top of the throne, and God says to Nathanael, he said, by the way, Nathanael, there was a story in the Old Testament about a guy who saw angels ascending and descending. You're going to see angels ascending and descending, but the Son of God is going to be at the bottom of the ladder. In the Old Testament, God was at the top of the ladder talking, but now Jesus is at the bottom of the ladder, and he said, I'm God, and I'm down here. That's kind of cool, isn't it? We see the same thing in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Jesus is the ladder, but in the Old Testament, he's at the top. So let me give you four truths, things that we can grasp from this real quickly. Number one, God is the God of tomorrow. Well, he's the God of yesterday and today too, but he is the God of tomorrow. Don't worry about tomorrow. We're living in today, and we worry ourselves sick about what's going to happen in a week or a month or a year or 6 months. Quit worrying about that. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, he said, take no thought of your life. Don't worry about it. Sufficient unto the day is the evil. Just let God take care of today and realize that in his grace, he's also going to take care of tomorrow. Number two, God's plan often includes times of difficulty. James chapter 1, James says, count it all joy when you fall into all kinds of trials and temptations, because when that joy is complete, when that trial is complete, that trial will bring forth patience. Paul says it a little bit differently. He said, when you go through the difficulties of life, it's like the wood, hay, and the stubble getting burned away. You go through the fire, and when that's burned away, what's left is the gold and the silver and the precious stone. Don't ever discount the difficulties of life, because it's those difficulties of life that strengthen you and burn away that which needs to be burned away. Third truth, those times of trial prepare us for greater things. Three Hebrew children went through the destruction of Jerusalem along with Daniel, were taken captive. They got thrown into the fiery furnace and they stood the test. Daniel got thrown into a lion's den. He stood the test. Joseph got sold into slavery and wound up being the leader of all of Egypt and saving his family from a horrible famine in Egypt, from a famine. The difficult times of life strengthen you for other times that will come. You may not see that right now. And Jacob, when Jacob got to Laban's house, he was expecting to marry and stay there for a while and go home. And he wound up as basically as a slave under Laban's rule for 20 years. Wasn't what he planned, but it made all the difference in the world. God promises, number four, he promises to be with us so we don't need to fear the future. He says, I will not forsake you until I have finished everything I have promised to you. I'm never going to turn my back on you. I'm not going to abandon you no matter what you think. I am here with you. Bethel, the house of God. For Jacob, it was a place to start over. It was a place of a brand new beginning. A lot of you here today need a Bethel. You need a start over. You need a do-over. God's grace is there. And you know what's so cool about this is that God's grace is for cheaters, liars, deceivers, thieves, adulterers. God's grace. He goes ahead of us with his grace. God's grace is there for those who make the wrong choices, who do the wrong thing. God's grace went before Jacob. God's grace is what pursued Jacob. There is no pit so deep that God can't pull you out of it. There's no river that is so flooded and so wide that God can't get you across it. There's no mountain so high that God can't climb to the top of it and help you down. I like what David said in Psalm 139. He said, Lord, where can I go to get away from you? If I go to the mountains, you're there. If I go to the depths of the sea, you're there. No matter where I go, the grace of God, the Spirit of God is there with me. You know, I think Jacob's Bethel prayer, if it was recorded, I think he would have been praying this to God in the morning. Lord, I need a fresh start. Lord, I need a new beginning. I'm tired of trying this on my own and failing. I'm so weary of life and this journey. Forgive me thinking that I didn't need you. I need your grace and I'm ready to start over. And some of you need to pray that prayer today. In this story, one of the truths I want you to grasp is that God is the one who chased down Jacob. God is the one who sought him out, even though he didn't deserve it. 500-mile trip to save his hide, God knew exactly where he was. This 500 miles of loneliness traveling all by himself, God knew that Jacob needed some kind of an encouragement, and he came to him. Jacob wasn't thinking God even cared. But God sought him out. I'm going to ask the praise team to come on up because we're going to have them lead us in a song as we close. It's a song that we have sung before many times. It's called The Reckless Love of God. And we've had some people come and say, well, God's not reckless. I can't believe God, you call God's love reckless. Well, that carries a lot of negative connotations, doesn't it? But that's because we're thinking of the definition of reckless as being a negative thing. We think of it as being rash or careless or irresponsible. But if you look in the dictionary, if you go on down to some of the other definitions of reckless, there is a definition there that says reckless means audacious, which means it's bold, it is fearless, it is daring, it is courageous, it is sudden, it is rapid, it is swift, it is speedy, it is undaunting, it is unfailing, it is dynamic. That's what audacious means. So when you think of God's love, think of it as being one of those things that is strong and bold and fearless and daring and courageous. Do you think Jacob deserved God to show his love to him? I don't. If I was God, I wouldn't have anything to do with Jacob. If I was God, I wouldn't have anything to do with me. So from a human perspective, for God to come to a guy who is a cheater, a thief, a deceiver, a liar, for God to come to him and say, hey, look, I'm going to bless you with all this, that sounds pretty reckless, irresponsible, if you want to take that definition. But what we find out is that's not what it's about. It's about God pursuing Jacob. Some of you here are Jacobs. Some of you here, you feel like you're in a pit so deep you can't get out. You feel alone. You feel abandoned. You're wondering if God even cares about you. The words to this song, oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. It chases me down. It fights till I'm found. It leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it. I don't deserve it. Still, you give yourself away over the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. That's awesome. That ought to be the theme of our heart, crying out that God is pursuing us. The refrain says this, there's no shadow you won't light up the bridge. There's no mountain you won't climb up. There's no wall you won't kick down. There's no lie you won't tear down. That's God's reckless love for us. Bold, audacious. To man, it seems pretty irresponsible to come after such a wicked sinner like that. Doesn't make sense. But he did.